Hi, and welcome to the Prepare Podcast. My name is Sarah Makula, and I'm your host. Today, I'm meeting with Captain Mary Kim, the Territorial Youth Secretary for the Salvation Army Central Territory. Today, Mary and I discuss a variety of topics, from calling to culture, food, vocation, faith, that ultimately circle back around to her identity in Christ. A full warning, though, Mary and I discuss her love of pork, a meat very popular and a staple food in her Korean culture. We get into detail of the process of butchering a pig. I just want to warn you so that you're not caught off guard. Enjoy this month's episode with Captain Mary Kim. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Sarah.
Welcome to the Prepare Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. I'm so excited to sit down with you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, could you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. I am Captain Mary Kim. I am the Territorial Youth Secretary for the Salvation Army here in the Central Territory. And so, I have been at my new appointment for 2 months and 2 days as of today.
Well, welcome. We're glad you're at THQ.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
How long have you been an officer, and where were you before this?
Well, let's see. I am starting my 7th year, so I was commissioned in 2010. So 2 years prior to being here at THQ, I was at the St. Louis Maplewood Corps as the Corps Officer there in the Midland Division. Loved being the Corps Officer. And then 4 years prior to that, I was the Divisional Youth and Candidate Secretary for the Kansas and Western Missouri Division. So I was over at THQ and then moved to Midland. And then now I'm here at THQ.
Great.
Yeah.
Now that's an uncommon first appointment.
Yeah. Yeah, you could say that. It's the first to go from CFOT, which is the College for Officer Training, straight to Divisional Headquarters. It's unusual, but, you know, no pressure.
No pressure at all. Just jump in. Yep. So what were you doing before you were at the college?
Well, I have always been involved with children's ministries and youth ministries. So in my before officer life, I was actually a teacher, a first grade teacher for 6 years. I taught third grade for 1 year, and I did 1 year of eighth grade special education because I thought maybe for grad school I would do special education and realized, oh, no. God's calling for me was definitely early childhood education, 0 to age 9. And that 1 year at Northbrook Junior High School really helped me to solidify what I am not called to do as far as teaching. Mm. So that was a good learning experience, too.
Good. Well, I hope during this conversation it comes out how you discovered your call to officership.
Sure.
And a few other things I hope come to the surface that we learn about you so our listeners will be inspired. Mm-hmm. And today we're going to take that format that we've done a few times here on the Prepare Podcast where I ask Mary to share 3 ways that if we knew her, we would know. So, for example, if you haven't heard this before and you're maybe tuning into the Prepare Podcast for the very first time, I might say, if you knew me, you would know that I love my patio in the summertime. So, Mary, what's your first, if you knew me, you would know?
Well, if you knew me, you would know that I love pork. I love all form of pig, period.
Okay. I did not see that coming. I was definitely thinking you're going to say, like, the Cubs, because you love the Cubs, right?
Oh, no, no.
No?
I don't get into sports.
Okay.
Maybe
I'm confusing you with your good friend, Vicky.
Well, Vicky is definitely my good friend. Mm-hmm. But I'll share this tidbit. I have an older brother who is a diehard White Sox fan. And I have a younger brother who is a diehard Cubs fan. Okay. So when we moved to Chicago in 1988, and I'm the girl in the middle sandwiched between two brothers, older ones White Sox, younger ones Cubs, So I learned early on to not talk about baseball with my family.
It's like politics.
Yeah. So I am a diehard Bears fan.
Okay.
Football all the way.
All right. Cool. Okay. Well, let's tell me more about this love of pork.
So, yeah. So if you knew me, you'd know that I love to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I love to eat particularly meat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a carnivore.
Mm-hmm.
And not ashamed of that at all. I love meat and all forms of meat. And people who know me know that I can put down a lot of food.
Mm-hmm.
Contrary to what I look on the outside,
mm-hmm.
I can put down a lot of food. Mm-hmm. But I do enjoy eating, and especially eating pork in all of its many wonderful forms.
Okay, so do you enjoy eating pork that other people prepared, or do you prepare the pork yourself?
Oh, no. I am definitely a lover of the eating process,
uh-huh.
and not the cooking process.
Okay.
I can cook if I must and if I have to survive and live, but the Lord has always blessed my life with people who love to cook and love to cook a lot of food, and I don't know why they never eat their leftovers. And I'm always like, microwave and freezer is my best friend.
I so don't get the people that don't like leftovers.
I know. They're the best part.
I love that. I love leftovers.
I've always been blessed with people who love the cooking process and cook a lot. And I have been the beneficiary of their cooking gifts.
Mary, I have to tell you, I think you're going to love this,
mm-hmm.
that my husband and I purchased a pig
that
he slaughtered.
Ooh.
And we have a freezer full of pig.
Including pig's feet?
That I don't think
so.
Why? Are we missing out on a delicacy?
Pig's feet, pig's ears.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wait, you guys solely bought a pig to slaughter it so that you can consume parts of it?
Yeah, all of it, but maybe not the ears.
I think you need to invite me over.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the first time, you know, my husband's family is Romanian.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time.
So that's cool.
If you knew me, you would know that my husband's family is Romanian. And the first time I went out to their farm, they have a farm in Indiana, they were slaughtering and doing all the things with the pig meat, and they in the process of like scorching the skin.
Yeah.
I am so sorry for all those animal lovers out there that are having a hard time with this. You might want to put it on pause or fast forward.
It's a great part of life.
Yes.
Scorched pig skin.
So they
scorch
that pig skin, and they go through this process a few times, and use salt and all this. So whatever, they end up having the skin at the end, and people will like chew on it like as like a gum substitute of some kind. So what I'm getting to is first time on the farm, and they ask me if I want to try it. And I'm like, okay, all of my world missions, mission team experience, this has been preparing me for this new lifestyle. I have to try it
so
with
this is
a
like
smile.
All your future family,
yeah.
Like,
oh,
there.
Yes. Yeah. And extended family, too. Like, everyone, like, the uncles are there because they're all, like, they're grinding the meat. They're going, like, all of it. So I'm just like, Lord, this makes sense. You've been mm-hmm. preparing me for mm-hmm. this. Mm-hmm. And so I ate it, and they were all like, oh, my gosh. They're like, we don't even do that. Like, people do, but we don't really even eat that. And I'm like, well, I just wanted to be culturally sensitive. So I relate very much with the love of pork. Is there a favorite form?
Well, I love ribs. So pork ribs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Bacon.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love bacon?
Yeah.
Like, bacon in any form, in all kinds, is just awesome to
mm-hmm.
me. Any, like, Korean dish with pork in it just makes it better. And
yeah.
the fattier the pork, the better the soup.
Ooh. I gotta go where you go.
Oh, yeah. We'll do.
Yep.
You'll invite me over?
Yes.
And then we'll do.
Okay.
My Korean.
I love that.
Awesome.
Sounds good. Okay, I want to go back to you mentioned when you and your family moved to Chicago. What year was that?
That was in 1988, November.
And where were you coming from?
So, well, there's a lot of aspects to that. Myself, My older brother, we were coming from Los Angeles, California. Because in November of 1988, my parents are Salvation Army officers, and they're also missionary Salvation Army officers. So they're Korean Salvation Army officers who were sent to the United States as missionaries.
Okay.
So it might sound a little bit weird, mm-hmm. but Korea sends the most missionaries globally.
That's awesome.
And Korea happened to send the first set of Korean officers to the United States because in 1980, there was, with many other populations and cultures, there were many immigrant populations that were moving to the United States. So the first Korean Salvation Army was started in the Western Territory in L.A. So we moved to L.A. in 1980. So all three of us kids with my parents, and then my parents served in L.A. from 1980 to 85. My older brother, Peter, who was, let's see, he was 12 when he came in 1980, so he was 17, a senior in high school in 85, and he chose not to go back to Korea. So he stayed in L.A. by himself with the host family. My parents and my younger brother, we went back to Korea. So in 1988, my parents were once again sent on their second missionary term, this time to Chicago. So I had already come back to L.A. January of 1988 to start my eighth grade. I was 15, and my brother was already there finishing his freshman year at UIC, or University of California, Irvine, so UCI. So by the time November came around, Peter and I were coming to Chicago, and my parents and my younger brother, John, were coming from Korea to Chicago. So we reunited as a family in 1988 in Chicago.
And been here ever since?
Yeah. I would say, you know, I'm a typical okay, which is officer's kid. You know, officer's kids move around from city to city, from place to place. But being an MK officer's kid, I just moved from country to country instead of just city to city. So I would consider Chicago home. I've lived in Chicago since 1988, all the way through high school and college and young adulthood. And let's see. I left in 2010 when I was commissioned and moved to Kansas City. So, yeah, Chicago's home.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good. I feel like we're knowing you even better.
Oh.
Like knowing your history.
Yeah.
Okay, Mary, let's go one level deeper. Mm-hmm. And can you share another thing that we would know if we knew you? If we knew you, we would know.
So if you knew me, you would know that I am Korean, but also I am Korean-American.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Please explain.
Well, if you just, well, I know this is a podcast, but if you looked at me without knowing me, having spoken to me and just walking down the street, looked at me, you would definitely see Korean Mary Kim. Now, my given name isn't Mary Kim. That's my Korean-American name. But, you know, I can dye my hair blonde. I can get, you know, green or blue contacts. I could, you know, speak with an, you know, flawless English, no accent, kind of like right now, mm-hmm. right? But if you knew me, if you don't know me, all you see is the Korean. And I think you probably people would assume things about me based on their personal experiences with other Koreans or the Korean culture or whatever they associate with what they know and experience with Korean. But me being Korean and American, Korean-American, I think once people get to know me, they realize, you know, like the reason why I love pork, mm-hmm. right? It's, well, pork, I mean, who wouldn't? But mm-hmm. the reason why I love pork, it's just because pork is a part of the Korean diet, whereas I don't really care for turkey because turkey and Thanksgiving is an American holiday. Mm-hmm. And turkey's not a regular form of the Korean diet. So I don't really need to have turkey on a regular basis, nor do I care for it too much. because it's not a part of not my regular diet. Mm-hmm. So I think if you knew me a little bit better, you would know that I am Korean American.
Well, what would be the difference between being a Korean American and just identifying or being Korean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I have the privilege of being both, being Korean and being American. And I have the, because I lived in Korea, I was born there, I came to the States. By the time I went back to Korea when I was 12, I had forgotten all of my first language, which is Korean. But having been back in Korea from ages 12 through 15, I had to relearn Korean, my first language. You know, and by the way, Korean isn't my primary language. It is my first language, but my heart language is English. Most people, if they don't know me, they just assume, oh, Korean's her primary language. But it's
and when
not.
You say heart language, you mean like really like what the mm-hmm. thought, how your thoughts mm-hmm. form in your head, they form in English? Yep.
I dream in English. I pray in English. Now, when it comes to numbers, just because I was in Korea for first grade and wrote, math is a big thing in Korea. So when I think numbers, it's in Korean. It mm-hmm. just happens. But mm-hmm. I was trained first grade in Korean because first grade in Korea, math level is very advanced compared to first grade here in the United States. So numbers, I think about in Korean. But when I dream, when I pray, when I'm asked to speak, English is my primary language. It's my heart language. But if you didn't know that about me, you would just assume, because what you see on the outside is the Korean. And no matter how much I change the outside, if you don't know me, you're going to assume, oh, Korean's her language, you know?
Yeah.
So I think for me, the being Korean, so now I am bilingual. I'm bicultural. I can speak, read, write, understand Korean. But me being Korean American, I do have the best of both worlds. I get to choose the best part of being Korean, the best parts of being American, and make my own. You know, and I guess they call it, you know, the third culture kid. Mm-hmm. You take the first, the second culture, and make your own mm-hmm. third best culture. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where the Korean American comes from. So, like, going back to that pork thing and turkey thing, you know, turkey's not a part of the natural Korean diet. Pork is. So I love pork. It's not that I hate turkey. I don't really care for it too much, but I love pork. I think another example like that is, you know, people think I am an extrovert. I love people. I get energized by people. And people think because I've been Americanized that this quiet, you know, submissive, you know, Korean girl is this outspoken, crazy American chick. But that's not the case. I've been created as an extrovert. It's not because I'm Americanized, but it's because that's how God created me and made me.
So when you say mm-hmm. people think, are you speaking of us, people in general? Are you speaking of a certain population of people, other Korean Americans or Koreans or just people think that from what their previous understanding of yeah. what a Korean, you know, might be, they think, oh, mm-hmm. if they don't understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that's just, it's human nature. You associate what you know with what you see. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been in a situation where I have literally been the only minority that fits into the gender minority, the racial minority, the socioeconomic minority, the linguistic minority. Like, literally, I have been the only minority in a subtext. In this context, and you can't blame people because we as human beings, you associate with what you know. And so, and you know, I think for, you know, I'm older and more mature now in my early 40s, I'm 43. I think in my 20s, when I was more energetic and eager and, less wise, I think I would have, and I probably did take more offense at people's maybe questions or comments. In my 30s, you know, truly began to understand me and how God created me, began to kind of see the other side a little bit. And I think now in my 40s, I'm understanding, yeah, you can't blame people for associating what they know, what they experience with what they see, because that's mm-hmm. just human nature. So my hope is that I help people educate them, help them understand a little bit so that if they're willing to see something in a different way, hey, there you go.
Okay, I have a question. If someone was to, you know, walk into the Korean Core, also known as Mayfair Community mm-hmm. Church, and they're not Korean, what would you want them to walk in with and know?
Mm-hmm. I think first and foremost, if you didn't know what Mayfair was and what the Korean Core is, just know that you can speak English to everybody, mm-hmm. whether they're adults or younger adults or children. They do understand English, all the children. I mean, unless they literally just got off the boat yesterday and they're fresh off the boat and just an immigrant. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows English. You do not have to know Korean. You won't offend anybody if you just speak to them in English. And I think sometimes, you know, whether it's a Korean core, or Spanish core, or, you know, whatever Laotian core you walk into, sometimes people feel, ooh, I got to know their language and their culture, otherwise I won't be accepted. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, you walked into that core, you're accepted because you physically came and you physically walked in. So you'll be welcomed, you know? And I think that's the first thing. I think the second thing, too, is, yeah, depending on whichever culture you're walking into, know some of the basic cultural norms of that mm-hmm. cultural group. Like the Korean culture is very honorific and respectful to its elders. So going up to a 65-year-old lady and being like, hi, high five. Mm-hmm. Won't necessarily be received well mm-hmm. if that 65-year-old grandma isn't Americanized to a degree. Mm-hmm. So knowing that bowing to elders is always good, but that's just a cultural norm that you can easily access or just ask someone and they'd be glad to share with you.
Okay, that's good. That's helpful to know. Well, what would, you know, from your 20s to your 30s and now in your very early 40s.
43. So I'm not mid 40s yet.
Early 40s.
Early 40s.
If you were to look, so you were kind of, you know, reflecting back on the way that you saw things in your 30s and in your 20s, mm-hmm. Especially in terms of cultural relations and being offended or not, mm-hmm. what would you say to your 20-year-old self about those things?
I think when I was in my 20s, so when I was finishing up college at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, woo-hoo,
I-L-I-N-I,
yep, I-L-I-N-I, and in my young adulthood when I was teaching, I think sometimes I put unnecessary emphasis on me being Korean, and everybody better know I'm Korean. Part of that was I was learning about me, you know, my self-identity, who I am, who God created me to be, and who I truly am in Him, you know, as a follower of Christ, as His daughter. But the 20s were, you know, and college, I think, has a tendency to sometimes, when you have a group of young adults in an institution like university, you know, community college, and there are cliques formed specifically by race, because, you know, the clubs, the sororities, the frats, they're usually by race and culture. Yeah, you do have the academic sororities and all that, but come on, who really spends time socially in those? You know, it's more.
Hey, some do.
Some do. Some do. You're right.
Some do.
I think I was an education sorority person.
Not me, but I had some friends that were mathletes.
Right. But I think, you know, in college has a way of, because for some cultures, it's the first time you're together with your people, you know, and it's like, whoo, I'm with my people. Mm-hmm. And you just have this natural drawn to each other. You're, you know, magnetic, like, whoo, I'm like.
Like drawn to people that you look like?
Yeah, exactly. Because when you're growing up as a minority and then all of a sudden you get all those minorities together, you're like, whoa, there's other Koreans like me here. You know, it's a cool thing to have. But I think in my 20s, I think I put unnecessary kind of emphasis on, hey, recognize my Koreanness. But I think that was because I was still working through who am I really as a person, regardless of my culture, my race, you know, who am I really as a child of God. And I think that came into fruition for me more so in my late 20s and 30s, you know.
Can you recall or pinpoint a moment that you started to have that sense of who you are?
Yeah. I think for me, I've always been a Christ-believing person. You know, I've grown up in generationally blessed families on both sides, on my mother and father's side. And I've been protected by generations of prayer, you know. And I've lived a very blessed life. And it's probably a minority group in this day and age and culture where, yeah, I lived in a two-parent household, secure, Christ-believing, didn't have issues. And but I always knew of God, but I really didn't know God personally until I was 21, like 21. And sometimes people are, like, surprised by that. But when you grow up as an officer's kid, a pastor's kid, a missionary kid, it's always like a third-person relationship with God. You know, your dad's the pastor, your mom's the pastor, preaching in the pulpit. So you have a third-person relationship with God your whole life. I was never the rebellious child. I'm the girl in the middle. I was always the obedient one. So I never rebelled. I always lived a good life. Of course I'm a Christian. Of course I'm a Christ follower. But that wasn't truly the case until I was 21. And my junior year in college, my sophomore, well, no, so junior year, yeah. So my small group leader, he knew kind of all about my my Salvation Army background, my basically missionary kid background. He knew of the Salvation Army, and he had the nerve, Sarah, had the nerve.
What'd he say?
To ask me right before, you know, in college you get off for Thanksgiving and you're off until like January. So before Thanksgiving, he had the nerve to say, Mary, I don't think you're a Christian.
Wow.
And I was
rude.
Not Christ-like in my response as a 21-year-old. I was not kind. And I took personal offense and told him off.
Yes, like any good Christian would.
Yeah, he was my small group leader, but you have no right, blah, 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 blah. But that's the impetus that got really started work in my life personally, my personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And I realized that Thanksgiving, Christmas into the new year, oh my goodness, I really don't have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. I need to get that right.
Mm.
So that kind of started it. And once my personal journey, as far as faith journey, became personal, I think that's when, okay, my identity really isn't the Korean. My identity really isn't the American. My identity isn't even Salvation Army, but it's as a Christ follower. And so I think that was the pinpoint. So,
Did you ever have a follow-up conversation with that leader?
Yeah, I know without a shadow of a doubt that God's Songman Choi was his name. And I say was because he is promoted to glory. Songman Choi is one of my angels, my blessings. He went on, you know, we finished that year in Bible study. He stayed on his senior year, I became senior, went on to seminary in Philadelphia. He was driving back from a youth event in Philadelphia, was driving behind a truck, construction truck. Some of the items on that truck were shaken off the truck, and he was killed on contact. So that was in 1997. So he had a funeral in Philadelphia at his local church there in the seminary he attended. And then there was also a funeral in April of 97 in Glenview, because his family was in Glenview. And so I went to his funeral, and because I am bilingual, I spoke to his parents, who spoke Korean, and come to realize that someone not only spoke truth into my life, but he had spoken truth specifically to other pastors' kids. And that same questioning, you're a pastor's kid, but I don't think you're a Christian. He was bold in his faith to do that. And I wasn't the only one that God used someone through. So he's on to glory.
Wow.
In 97.
But what a legacy.
What a legacy.
Really.
Truly. So I'll get to see him someday and be like, thanks, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I think I first knew of you, mm-hmm. or knew who you were, probably 11 years ago. What year was it that you led that team to go to Georgia?
2004, the second time. First time was 1994.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. So this was your return.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, I knew of you because my good friend Carrie was on your team.
Yes.
And I got to see really the impact you had on her in leading her and shepherding her. And then I ended up working in that department years later, and you were really always like the standard.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah, you were like the, like, I was like, I want to be a leader like Mary, like to impact those around
wow.
me and really lead them well. So can you give me a little bit of glimpse into, because I that was like secondhand experience mm-hmm. with you. Like I just heard from a friend, and I saw, not just heard, but I saw the way she was changing and the way that summer was formational for her. And I feel like you had a big part in walking her and probably the other team members into that spiritual formation.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember things
yeah.
about that summer?
I'm a little, like, shocked and taken aback.
I caught you off guard with that one.
Like, summer mission teams in my personal development as an officer now was pivotal. But summer mission team experience in my Christ walk and following, it's been such an important aspect of who I am today. So thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that 2004 summer mission team, ROG crew, ROG, they'll know. that was truly a special summer and team for me, 2004. And the Republic of Georgia is a special place for me personally, because I was a part of the team that went the first time in 1994. And if you know anything about, you know, the Eastern European bloc, former Soviet Union, in 1991, 92, when the Soviet Union dissolved, Georgia, Republic of Georgia, was the first, you know, former USSR bloc to say, hey, we're free, you know. And then came, you know, others, Ukraine, all that other stuff. But Georgia was the first. And so after the USSR dissolved, 92, 93, there was a lot of civil war within Georgia. So when we went in 1994, there was some unrest, some uncertainty. The Salvation Army was in its infancy in Georgia, but man, that 94 summer was the best summer as far as for me as a Salvationist. So like you have to remember, someone asked me that question, like literally, when I turned that Christmas of 20, turning 21, I came to the realization, I don't have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. I'm going to be 21, 22. So I threw myself into God's word, spiritual disciplines. God provided accountability, not just at U of I through a small group, but within the Salvation Army. And I just dived into God. And so the next thing was like, ooh, SMT, I get a whole summer. So I applied for SMT and got on that first team. And Major Pat Cadu and Luke Houghton were the leaders of that first team. So went to Georgia. And that's the first place that I was proud of the Salvation Army as my church. Because I got to see, oh my goodness, we really are heart to God and hand to man church. And 94 summer was the summer that I, basically decided and said, the Salvation Army is my church. It's not my dad's church. It's not my mom's church. You know, I'm fourth generation on my dad's side and third generation Salvationist on my mom's side.
Wow.
So you cut me.
Yeah.
And I'll bleed, you know, red, yellow, and blue. Like, seriously. But 94 summer SMT to Georgia was the first time I said, this is my church. I am proud of my church, and I get to serve God in my church. I think a lot of officers' kids and a lot of Salvationists, generational Salvationists, who grew up in the Salvation Army, they don't take that personal ownership of the Salvation Army as their church. But that happened for me in 94. And then, you know, I come back, finish college. I finish my early childhood education degree. I'm teaching first grade in Evanston, loving it. You know, doing the second best thing that a Christian person can do, right? Because I knew I had a calling from a long time ago. And I'm lowercase c calling, specifically as a Salvation Army officer. But I chose not to listen to God. You know how that is.
Mm-hmm.
But I was doing the second best thing. I was a Christian teacher in the public school system, being a good role model, not only to the kids and parents, but the teachers that I work with, and justifying to God, God, right, I'm doing good. Look, all my summers. You know what the three best reasons for becoming a teacher are?
Summers off?
June, July, August. Oh. Exactly.
Like,
right?
There's like one great thing in summer's off.
Yeah.
Is that what teachers say, don't they?
June, July, August.
Yeah, my mom is a teacher.
Yeah.
And so to me, like, I was like, adults aren't supposed to work in the summer.
Exactly.
What is this?
So, you know, every summer I had off. So, of course, I did day camp at my core. I did VBS. All that good stuff. God, right? I'm doing good. Mm-hmm. I did good, right?
Yeah.
Justifying myself. But an opportunity came because I had June, July, and, you know, August off for 2004 to be the team leader this time, to going back to SMT, Republic of Georgia. And I welcomed that experience. So Carrie is a part of that team. You know, Jeff, Marcus, Misha, and all these other people.
Mm-hmm.
Kirsten
mm-hmm.
went off. And so there were others, too. And just for me, being able to go back 10 years after and to see the country just develop, that was awesome, to reconnect with some of the original 1994 kids who were now teenagers and young adults, and they were the leaders of the Corps. Mm-hmm. They were the ones leading the summer camps. To see this gentleman, young adult in 1994, who followed us after an open-air meeting at the Rustavelli station, to see him 10 years later now as the Corps officer.
Get out of here.
It was like, what?
Wow.
So that 2004 summer was when Salvation Army officership was really a viable option for me. That summer was the summer that I said, okay, Lord, I fully surrender now, and I'm ready to fully obey. So summer mission team, it has a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
I think, you can see.
Yeah, I think anyone that's experienced it knows exactly what that means.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And to know, yeah, it's like a special club
mm-hmm,
to
mm-hmm.
be a part of.
Yep.
Okay, well, let's move on to our last and final, if you knew me, you would know. Mary, if we knew you, we would know.
Yeah. So if you knew me, you would know that my true identity in Christ is from Christ. That indeed I am, as it talks about in 2 Corinthians, I am a new creation. The old has gone, the new has come. If you knew me, you would truly know that my citizenship, I am an American citizen since 1994.
By the way.
But my true citizenship is a heavenly one. If you knew me, you would truly know. If you truly knew me, you would know that I am the most fulfilled, the most, I feel the most safe at this point in my life as a Salvation Army officer, and the most, I guess, just complete right now, because I know my true identity in Christ and Christ alone. So, yeah.
That's great. That's a great way to be known. Mm. All right, Mary, can you speak more about, you know, you've talked about how Republic of Georgia, that SMT experience was kind of ushering you towards understanding what you're called to. Can you talk more about your calling and calling in general?
Yeah, for sure. I guess you can think of it this way. I think there's a capital C calling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I wanted to follow up about because you mentioned that. Like, what does that mean? Okay, good.
And in my personal opinion and experience, and this is just my personal thoughts, I think, and some of my officer peers might think differently, and that's okay. We agree to disagree. But for me, my capital C calling is first and foremost as a Christ follower. And a subset of that, because I'm fully devoted to Christ as his follower, and I've committed to the Salvation Army as my church because I've taken personal ownership. The lowercase c calling for me specifically is as a Salvation Army officer. And that's God's will for me. That's where I feel the most comfortable, the most centered, and most fulfilled in my life right now as a Salvation Army officer than when I was teaching in Evanston, you know, when I was anything else before that. I think a lot of times, you know, for me, it's true of a lot of officers' kids especially, because the pressure's always there. Everybody's always looking at you and always saying stuff, whether it's in jest or seriousness. So when are you going to be at CFOT? When are you going to be an officer? And you hear that from for your whole life, so you dismiss it. And honestly, for me, Salvation Army officership, I know the call's been there as far as specifically for me since I was very young, you know. But I saw firsthand some of the hardships that my parents experienced living as missionary officers in L.A., away from immediate family and some of the messiness of being a pastor. And I think I vowed to say, oh, no, never going to do that. Nope, nope, nope. And if I did have a rebellious nature in me, and people always said, when are you going to be an officer? I'd be like, nope. In my brain, I said, nope, 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 not going to. But once the opportunity really, well, the Lord gave me that chance, I think the Salvation Army officership viability really became a realization for me. I'm trying to remember if it was like mission and purpose map. Mm-hmm. It was when Commissioner Ken Bailey was the territorial commander. So it might have been map maybe 2002, 2003. It was definitely before 2004. And one of the things that Commissioner Ken Bailey spoke at this map conference was basically, you know, he was talking about Elijah and Elisha and just the mantle of leadership that was given to Elisha. And just he said in a sidebar comment, and for those of you listening right now who don't even think that officership is an option for you, I don't know what else I can say to you. Mm-hmm. And then he went on, and he was speaking to me. Because at that point in 2003, you know, I was thinking, whew, I'm too good to be a Salvation Army officer. You know, mm-hmm. I'm too holy. I'm too good. you know. Salvation Army can't handle me. You know. But God always has a way of showing us his perfect will, time, and plan. So that started to really open my heart a little bit more to, oh, Salvation Army officership. And there were other people in my life who spoke into my life, other circumstances, so that when the 2004 summer mission team opportunity came up, that's when I was ready to fully say, okay, Lord, this is your will for my life. I fully surrender now. Mm-hmm. I'm ready.
Yeah. I think he a lot of times takes us out of our comfort zone to soften us, to be more receptive and receiving, mm-hmm. because in those settings, we need him. I mean, we always need him. Mm-hmm. But in those kind of settings, you're like praying, like, I'm scared. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know the language. I don't know that this. I don't know that that. And yep. he's like, I got you right where I want you. Yep. And I'm going to tell you something true.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you addressed that kind of the big C and little C, because mm-hmm. I was seeing something the other day on Facebook or wherever that sometimes we focus too much on calling. And I was like, well, if you have an understanding, mm-hmm. because our number one calling mm-hmm. is to him mm-hmm. and to be obedient. Mm-hmm. Like that's maybe there is a too much of an emphasis on like a vocational calling, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but calling does not just mean your vocation.
Right. Right.
Because that you can't take that with you.
Yeah. But it'd be awesome if your calling included your vocation as well, because then you get to love what you do, kind of like me right
this
now.
This is a plug for officership.
Love what I do. If it's your calling, you can't run away, even if you try. And I think the thing about obedience that I've learned again and again is that delayed obedience still is disobedience, you know? And
which
is sin. It is sin. I want to be fully surrendered and fully obedient to Jesus Christ and God the Holy Spirit in me all the time, not just when I feel like I'm up to the task.
When it's convenient.
I want to be fully surrendered and fully obedient and know that God's got it. He's God. Mm-hmm. Praise the Lord, because I don't have to be God. I think I'm God sometimes, lowercase g. But, you know, who am I to think that I can't do something when God's enabled me to do it?
That's right.
So.
Okay, Mary, last thing. Besides pork, what, and this is what I ask a lot of our guests, what are the things, if you one, two, or three, you don't have to list all three, but whatever comes to mind that you really are into, like you really enjoy, you get a lot of joy from, besides pork, what do you get joy from?
Like, seriously, people don't think, I really love food. Like, eating brings joy to my life.
Yes.
That, of course, I love family. I love my family. And the fact that I'm here in Chicagoland now, I'm back with my family.
Yeah, what a gift.
And now I have six nieces and nephews that I get to pour into. And I love family time. But as much joy as I get from family time, it's just as equal when I'm getting to experience, like, food for the first time. Mm-hmm. Like, not just the eating process, but with the people. And it's the relational building.
Communal.
New experiences. Because I'm not scared of new experiences. I kind of thrive on that. And if it includes food, even better. Mm-hmm. You know.
Take notes, guys. Yeah. Get on Mary's good
side. I'm telling you. You know, so truly, I enjoy that. Of course, family is important to me. But I think for me, like right now, as a 43-year-old captain in the Salvation Army here in Central Territory, I have never been as content and fulfilled as I am right now. For me being single, my singleness, it's a gift that I choose to receive. And I am most fulfilled right now and content right now than I've ever been in my life. And that's not because, like, I'm holier than anybody else, you know, or that I'm better than anybody else. But I think truly it's because I am so secure in my knowledge of who I am in Christ. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no other place I'd rather be. And wherever the Lord has me, right now it's Chicagoland, but the Salvation Army is an appointment-based system. God in his wisdom can tell the leadership of my church to say, hey, we can use Mary, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I can go anywhere, you know. But wherever I go, I know that Christ goes with me and I will be content and fulfilled because I'm content and fulfilled in Christ. And, you know, the 20s where really God developed the spiritual disciplines in my life and really introduced me to the hard work of disciplines, because it doesn't come easy. Some disciplines, the spiritual disciplines, some are easier than others for me. But the fact that I've had the chance to be taught the disciplines and practice it through my 20s and 30s, and now I've been able to personalize it and be drawn closer to the Lord through my disciplines of prayer, my disciplines of meditation, I've never been more fulfilled and content. And it's an exciting place to be in your life when you're fulfilled and you're content. So yeah, that's kind of where I am right now.
Awesome. Okay, Mary, if you knew me, you would know that I was voted biggest eater in my senior class for girls.
Awesome. Awesome.
I thought you might like that.
I love it. See, I knew I liked you from the very get-go.
Can you believe that?
That's awesome.
Like over 500 students.
Parents
are so proud.
Awesome.
All right. Well, thank you, Mary, for joining me. This was a ton of fun.
Awesome.
And
me too.
I was very inspired by you, and I know our listeners will be too.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks again for listening to the Prepare Podcast. I hope you're subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. The Prepare Podcast exists to meet with women of faith and in ministry to discuss their experiences and wisdom to prepare and equip us in our faith pursuits and callings. Something you may not know is the small group communities called Embrace get their discussion topics from the Prepare Podcast. So based on this month's conversation with Mary, the theme will be Embrace Identity. If you're curious to learn about Embrace, visit our show notes and today's post you'll find on www.uscwomensministries.com. Thanks again for listening. See you in December.